Welcome to the Curious Podcast, where we are constantly in the process of getting to the bottom of shit.
And I remember one time he came to give us food. I asked him to put a radio outside, and I couldn't believe what was going on in the country. The leaders who used to tell us to love one another, they were calling people to kill everybody of my tribe. I remember one government minister said, "Do not forget children."
This week, we will be continuing our discussion into remote mind control because it's just so interesting. The prevalence of this technology and how it has been used to activate violence and bloodshed. As mentioned in the last episode, psychotronic weaponry is a vast topic with many aspects involved. I will be doing a sort of mini-series in which we look at examples of its use. Today, we will be going back to 1994, when the American government used remote mind control and it led to devastating consequences. I think it may surprise some of you when I mention the disaster because of the connections I'm going to make, but we need to remember that not everything is what it seems. Though devastating, the knowledge that the human mind can be hacked and taken over is fascinating because it means the world is much more complex than we have been led to believe. Thus, lulling the public into a false sense of security, thinking life is simple, limited, and predictable.
It was an operation to get the Hutu and the Tutsi fighting each other, and then suddenly it went berserk. Eyes glazed, the mood of the Hutu crowd went from simple anger to uncontrollable rage, and within minutes, hundreds of assorted Tutsi body parts were flying through the air, creating electronic rage.
If you haven't listened to episode 83, please do so, as this episode is a part two to that. Humans have been unknowing guinea pigs for centuries. As scientists tinkered and experimented with the human mind, they have come to many realizations. These discoveries have been groundbreaking in the fields of science and technology, but you will never hear of these developments because they are not for the benefit of mankind, as I stated last episode. Like your everyday electrical devices, humans are hackable and vulnerable to attacks. These attacks vary in degree and are carried out covertly, unbeknownst to the chosen target. In the previous episode, we went over individual cases, but psychotronics can be implemented successfully on large crowds too. This is what we will be focusing on, specifically one particular case resulting in the genocide of over 1 million people. Quote, "When the news of the presidential crash came in over the VHF radio, one of the Hercules planes was swiftly prepared for takeoff. The flight engineer checked the attachment of the RATO, rocket-assisted takeoff packs, while the scientist made final adjustments to a large microwave dish mounted on the rear landing ramp of the aircraft. It was this strange and esoteric piece of equipment alone that would directly contribute to the deaths of more than 1 million African civilians during the 100 days that followed. Though completely silent in operation, the single microwave dish had more killing potential than a whole squadron of AC-130 Spectre gunships armed with 50 Gatling cannons." End quote. This crash would be an important moment in history due to the series of tragic events that followed. So I've just laid out a backdrop for you of what happened and what was on these mystery planes. Remember the microwave dish later on in this episode. Just remember that. The CIA had to cause outrage amongst the Rwandan population. How do intelligence agencies do this? They usually assassinate a popular figure, usually in politics and liked by the people. Like JFK, whom they assassinated for slightly different reasons. On April 6, 1994, Rwandan President Habyarimana, Burundi President Tari Amira, I'm sorry, I just fucked that up, and almost all of their senior government officials were aboard a commercial plane flying above central Rwanda. Cannon shells suddenly launched at the aircraft's main body, tearing through the hard exterior. Seconds later, the plane exploded into flames, crashing back to land and killing everyone inside of it. Two African presidents and their staff had just been assassinated. This opened the floor for Operation Crimson Mist. Operation Crimson Mist is said to be a conspiracy theory. It has neither been confirmed by the US government nor its central intelligence. This doesn't really mean anything if they don't admit it, because they are usually concealing things from the public, as we've spoken about many times before. Just to give you a reminder, it was only this year that the CIA released documents that finally admitted that they were involved in the assassination of JFK. Most of us already knew they were involved, but they needed to wait decades because of the backlash that would likely have been caused by their admission back then. So what makes people still think the government and the CIA would tell people the truth? Operation Crimson Mist is known as a clandestine operation initiated by the US government and CIA utilizing experimental mind control on Rwandan citizens. Yes, that's a mouthful and it sounds pretty far out there, but keep listening. Am I saying the Rwandan people were under mind control during that genocide? Yes. This was the largest example of people experimented on using psychotronic weapons that is known. Before the Tutsi and Hutu tribes began ravaging one another, well, it was mainly the Hutu tribesmen. A plane was reported to be hovering above them at that time. One of the Hercules planes that were owned by the US government, adjusted by their scientists and operated by the CIA. As word spread of the presidential crash, so did rumors. The US government, like the rest of the world, knew that the country of Rwanda had a lot of struggles. This included being a former colony of Belgium, which left its own indelible mark on the country. Also, like many other African countries, continuous chronic bad governance and inadequate political systems were the status quo. That's not to throw Africa under the bus. I'm ethnically African, but I can admit that Africa has been broken for a long time. The brokenness of it is why it has been such an easy target for Western countries. If the people are not even united and are separated by 1 million tribes, then you can easily cause bad blood amongst these tribes. This is the easiest way for you to get a nation to destroy itself because you barely have to put any work in yourself. Once they get angry enough, they will do the work for you and kill each other. I hope that one day Africa will stop holding such importance over this tribal system because it has destroyed large parts of the continent, including the country I'm from, but I'm not holding my breath because these people worship tribes. We see this slowly happening to America, where they have tribalized the people into Democrat versus Republican, vaxxed versus unvaxxed, and so on. It's fascinating seeing Western countries tribalizing more and more now, because who knows where it will lead to. Maybe they have the same plans that they did for Rwanda. So back to Rwanda. The CIA began to spread misinformation about who crashed the plane. This is important because the first narrative set is the one that people latch onto, as we remember so very fondly during the COVID pandemic. Through muddying the waters, the CIA were able to manufacture real suspicions of foul play surrounding the presidential air crash. Many intelligence agents worked besides civil servants and Rwandan security service in Kigali, the capital city. So the CIA were amongst the staff, high staff, ranking officials, and they were making sure to keep tabs, but also making sure that they were spreading this information onto these people, because these people would obviously go back home and spread it. And this is how you get people to get angry about something that actually doesn't really mean anything to them. So these suspicions naturally spread throughout the community and began to sow seeds of discontent amongst members of the public. Remember, the two prominent tribes of the community, the Tutsis and the Hutus. The Hutu tribesmen were angry enough to attack the Tutsi first. Both sides attacked one another with rocks and machetes, but it did not escalate further. As the two tribes were within the same vicinity and both displayed feelings of animosity, it created the perfect environment for a psychotronic attack.
The 6th of April 1994. The Rwandan president is killed when his plane is shot down. With confusion over who's to blame and the government in disarray, the killing of Tutsis begins. 7th of April 1994. As UN peacekeepers stand aside, Rwandan soldiers and Hutu militia hunt for Tutsis. Some people are shot, but many more are killed with clubs, sticks and machetes. Radio broadcasts call for the extermination of Tutsi cockroaches. The 11th of April 1994. Tens of thousands of Tutsis and Hutu moderates have already been killed. UN troops under attack themselves withdraw to the airport. The civilians they had been sheltering are left to the Hutu mobs.
Of course, this was all a covert operation. And what they had ready on the tarmac near the Hutu tribe were C-130 Hercules planes armed with microwaves that they beamed these microwaves over the Hutus and inflamed their anger, exacerbated an anger that was already there. So they thought this anger was their own, and they became raging murderers. We have the documents. We have Operation Crimson Mist.
They thought their anger was their own. We have the documents. Operation Crimson Mist, a huge massacre, ladies and gentlemen. We just heard about it as Tutsis and Hutus out there in Rwanda. But in fact, there was so much more. How many people have heard of psychotronic weapons? How many people have heard of silent weapons, of synthetic telepathy, the Lily Wave? The list goes on. The idea of there being targeted individuals isn't somebody's imagination. This is well documented throughout history. Many MK Ultra programs centered around dosing people that weren't even aware so that they could record the outcome.
So remember the last episode when I actually discussed components needed for a psychotronic attack? They firstly, if they are controlling a crowd, they would need that crowd to firstly feel anger or whichever emotion they would like. That already has to be there naturally. They can't completely manufacture that. They can only turn up the dial on anger, sadness, rage, etc. So they need to firstly get them into that vibe. They need to do something, which is what they did here. Many locals and tribesmen themselves note that the feeling in the air was that of annoyance and frustration due to the rumors about the presidential crash. Then something changed that caused a switch to flip in the minds of those in the area. As the Hutus began advancing towards the Tutsis, all individuals present were victims of the electromagnetic waves that were blasted from the plane that hovered over the Hutu tribesmen. There is a clear correlation between the moment the plane hovered over the area and the level of anger multiplying, particularly amongst the Hutus. This in turn triggered 100 days of horror as the Hutu tribe members went on a deadly tirade of murder, torture, and mutilation. Quote, "What the Hercules crew had just achieved has been an open secret since the late 50s. When researchers accidentally discovered that there is a precise control brainwave for literally everything we do and for everything we feel. The problem back then was that each of these control brainwaves, rage, fear, panic, lethargy, vomiting, and so on, had to be transmitted with an accuracy taken out to 3 decimal places, or they simply did not work at all. But as the years rolled by, and with the advent of transistors and microprocessors, the operational application of precise control brainwaves became practical reality." End quote. So the Hercules crew, referring to the plane used in Rwanda, were the team involved in the operation that initially led to the Rwandan genocide. Scientists were able to lock onto the crowd's negative emotions and literally dial it up to the extreme, to the max, resulting in senseless rage and fury. The scenes of violence were so horrific it made world news as people everywhere watched the tragic scenes on their television screens. Many of us have since seen movies, documentaries, and TV specials released following the genocide. Part of that, in my honest opinion, is to continue solidifying the base narrative of what happened back then and how it happened. Yes, there were always tensions between the two tribes, which is documented, as well as government corruption like many other nations. I say this to point out that despite that, many had never seen this kind of escalation in rage, almost instantaneously in several people at the same time. It was like something had activated the Hutu tribesmen. Tutsis and Hutus had always experienced disputes and even casualties, yet many witnesses say this time was different. Everyone was killing anyone they thought were Tutsi. Even government officials and community leaders encouraged the killing to continue and not to forget to kill the children too. Where do you ever hear that happening?
Imakile Ilabagiza's life turned upside down when the Rwandan genocide began.
This was one of the most shocking blights on our history.
He put me to sit in the bathroom, 3 by 4 feet. One guy, he was like a friend to me, said, "I have killed 309 people. I want Imakile to be the 400. They divided the people of the country in 2 main tribes, Hutu and Tutsis.
Tutsis were slaughtered in their tracks wherever they were found.
You fell into this category, you became one tribe. If you fell in the other, you became the other tribe. To a point where among brothers, same father, same mother, became different tribes.
This is a real form of racialism.
These people had lists. They had lists of people that had to be killed, and then it became crazy.
It's me. This is my neighborhood. I haven't changed. We're friends.
Hutus armed with machetes searched every house, every hill.
It's over. They found me. They're going to kill me. And I remember thinking, this is it.
You were hunted for 91 days. How did you survive?
I had to go through the forest, because I already have started to see people around the road who were angry.
Immaculate's father told her to run to a minister's house 3 miles away and to beg him to hide her. The minister was a Hutu, a member of the majority tribe that was killing the Tutsis. But he'd been a friend of the families, and he was a minister.
I went to him, I was shaking. He drove me to one little bathroom of his bedroom, a tiny, 3 by 4 feet. You know, I thought for me it was already too small for myself. And then he went back, brought 5 more women.
Immaculé and the other tall women sat with their backs against the wall. They pulled the smaller girls down on top of them. They couldn't all move at the same time. They took turns standing and stretching. 7 women in this bathroom, 3 feet by 4 feet. Several people had seen the Tutsi women arrive at the pastor's house, but no one had seen them leave. So after a few days, dozens of Hutu stormed the house, hoping to find the women and kill them.
There's a little window in the bathroom. I went up and I looked through the curtains, and I saw like people like running.
Inside the house.
And we heard them. I can see the spears.
They brought their spears into the house?
In the house. I never been so scared in my life. A number of them, when they came in, like 100 of them, went to make a circle around the house to make sure that nobody jumps out of the window.
Their faces were easily recognizable, and there was murder in their eyes. These were my neighbors, people I'd grown up and gone to school with. Some had even been to our house for dinner.
I remember one guy, he went to primary school with me. He was like a friend to me. We played together. He was outside of the bathroom one time and he said, "I have killed 399 cockroaches. I want the market to be the 400. I was so scared that he knows where I am. He's so sure. I heard them outside of the bathroom. This was a 4-bedroom house. There's nothing in my heart can tell me they might not find us. I knew it was over. 300 to 400 people. They started to scream when they came inside. And somehow I remember feeling like I had two voices over my shoulders. Pain I cannot put in words. It was like life swept out of your body in a second. I became dry instantly. I couldn't even find saliva to swallow.
Even priests and clergymen handed over innocent people that sought refuge in the churches. Evil ruled over the country for those 100 days. Just to let you guys in on how long mind control has been in use and how long it has been a known technology. Here is something from globalsearch.ca, so that's a Canadian website, actually speaking about Americans knowing about this technology. Quote, in 1976, the future national security advisor to President Carter, Vygenu Zezinski, wrote a book, Between Two Ages, America's Role in the Technotronic Era. In the book, he predicted more control and directed society based on the development of technology, where an elite group will play a leading role which will take advantage of persisting social crises to use the latest modern techniques for influencing public behavior and keeping society under close surveillance and control. The use of mind control technologies was predicted as well in the publication of Strategic Studies Institute of the U.S. Army War College, published in 1994, end quote. So, people have been writing about this, and it isn't science fiction. These books are under the non-fiction category. Just to ring it home to some people that still think we are living in a fantasy land when we're speaking about mind control and electromagnetic waves and psychotronic weapons. It is very much real, and by now it's probably even more advanced and even more complex to the point where we wouldn't even notice. It's not like the Rwandan people even noticed anyway, because everywhere I look, no one actually comments on the fact that it's very weird. Everybody that was in the opposing group, the Hutus, suddenly became super angry as if their anger was activated. And there are some sources that say this 100 days of violence was planned beforehand, like they have lists of Tutsi members' names and things like that. But again, why would they plan something like this so grave? It doesn't make sense to me. I just feel like it is a cope, a bit of a statement to get out of the way, because it is very odd what they did. The fact that they beheaded people, made dogs eat people's heads. There was even some story saying a baby was made to eat its mother's head. Obviously, the baby didn't know, I think. So it shows you the level of disturbance that this genocide was at, and I just don't think that is organic or natural. I definitely know there are skeptics that will chalk up the genocide to warring tribes being warring tribes. However, these tribes, again, I'm sorry to keep saying this, but they've existed for a long time. And in that time, there has not been any other reported genocide or something of this magnitude. This is also the same across other countries in Africa living amongst or nearby opposing tribes. There are always casualties, but not a witch hunt to this extent. People were being categorized by tribe and also identified based on eye shape and other features that were associated with Tutsis. They were slaughtered. This was the African Holocaust, but worse. Also, why does nobody ask themselves why the Hutus in particular were that angry and passionate about a political leader? Both presidents that died in the crash belonged to the Hutu tribe. The Hutus were so enraged they began beheading thousands of Tutsis, including children. It doesn't make sense why they would be that angry about two leaders dying. Political corruption is huge in Africa, as well as assassinations. The level of anger does not match up with the original cause and trigger. I believe we are being conditioned to think that humans behaving like complete barbarians is normal and happens, but it is not. It's completely unnatural what happened. I might do a part two in terms of the Rwandan genocide. I'm not sure because there are some things I did miss out as I wanted to try and make the links for you guys to see that some things that have happened in the past that we've been told are just genocides and mass killings and senseless violence are not really all that senseless. And I say this because I actually have a similar example of something that happened in Baghdad to a crowd as well, quite similar to what happened in Rwanda, where it seemed like everybody became activated and felt the same emotions at once. So it's quite interesting, actually. Let me just bring up this source right quick. Quote, one classic example of this was the looting of the Baghdad Museum, apparently by a crowd of undisciplined rabble, but video footage tells a different story. To pull off this stunt, the American authorities needed to assemble a crowd, managed quite easily with a promise of free food. Then they needed to place the crowd outside the museum, which again was easy because they located the free food outside the museum itself. Next up, the attention of the crowd had to be drawn to the museum itself, which was achieved in spectacular fashion by firing two 120mm shells from an Abrams tank gun straight through the main doors. The video shows two soldiers gesticulating to the crowd, urging them to go in and help themselves, thereby clearly identifying the target Rwandan style. Then it starts to get really interesting. The two soldiers rapidly withdraw, leaving the Iraqi standing leaderless outside the open doors. And then, click, just like flicking a light switch, the entire crowd goes nuts, absolutely simultaneously, which never happens in real life. In the real world, there is always a leader visibly stirring up the crowd and preparing them for action, but not outside the Baghdad Museum. End quote. Isn't that interesting? So that Baghdad looting actually happened in 2003, and it has a lot of similar markers to what happened with the crowd there. They all needed to be in one place or in a certain area. They were led by Americans in this case, but it was very obvious they wanted them to be there for some reason. And then once they got them there, they disappeared because obviously the soldiers did not want to be hit by those electromagnetic waves. Otherwise, they would also be triggered into the same rage that these people were, because at the end of the day, it's going to affect any human in that area. So if you're a human being, you really don't want to be in that electromagnetic field. So I just think we do need to question some things, and maybe it is far out there, but I've also given you guys something to think about, and you maybe might look into this Rwandan genocide more closely. Who knows? It was very tragic and very sad what happened, and I don't take any of the survivors' experiences away from them, because what they went through was absolutely horrific. But I just don't buy the fact that the Hutus just decided to go on a 100-day rampage and did some of the things that they did, which was so disgusting. I don't think they did that in their right mind. So when you hear about people killing their neighbors, their friends, their family, people that they've seen every day, spent time with, something isn't right when multiple people are doing it at the same time. I do hope that, you know, within the future, it does become more known that psychotronic weaponry is a thing, mind control is a thing, and people stop laughing at it like it's a conspiracy theory, because the more people keep thinking that, the easier it is for them to continue doing things like this and experimenting on crowds. We don't know if, for example, the Trayvon Martin crowd, that when he died and there was protests, I think it was 2017 or 16, and they went out of control. We don't know if they were experimenting on that crowd. We don't know if the 2020 riots and protests that were happening all over America was because they had actually turned up their anger. Obviously, people are going to be angry about something and want to be outside and protest. I'm not denying that no one is going to be angry, but the level of anger is very telling when you try and compare it to what people are angry about. If it doesn't make sense, then we have to start thinking, what could be happening to this crowd? Are they being influenced by something else? Is there an external influence here? But, you know, people don't actually want to think about that. It kind of also reminds me of the gang stalking case that I wrote about in my article on my website, where I was discussing this one guy who made an entire YouTube channel about being gang stalked, and he would always say that there was a certain van, or yeah, it was a white van that was outside of his house. And again, they need things like vans and planes if they are going to target people, crowds. So it is very interesting that there was a crowd that was hovering over the Rwandan people at that time before anything happened. Not the plane that crashed, but there was another plane that came afterwards that people aren't talking about enough. What was that plane doing there? Why was it hovering over them? But again, this is a very interesting deep topic, and I definitely will do some more episodes about it, maybe in a few months. We'll take a break from it right now because it's a lot to digest and process. I agree. It's basically showing you that everything you've been told is fake is not really fake, it's actually real. So let me know what you guys think about it. Comment below. There is a section where you can actually say how you found the episode or what you think about the episode. Let me know, because I'd love to know. And make sure to check out thecuriouspodcast.co.uk, because that is my new website, new and improved, and this has got all the posts, Six Ad World posts, which are pretty deep. If you want to get super deep with learning about how much we are lied to, please be sure to support if you enjoy what I'm doing, and I will still continue to do it because I love getting to the bottom of things and just trying to find out what's going on in this world, because, you know, we have a lot of people in high places that aren't telling us what's happening. Thanks for listening, guys. I really appreciate it. If you're into the strange, morbid, or curious, I'll see you in the next episode. Stay safe, stay curious, for real.